The views expressed on this show by guests and the hosts on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of architects and engineers for 9/11 truth.
Welcome to 9/11 Freefall. I'm the host, Andy Steele. Last week, the 9/11 Truth Movement lost the founder of Pilots for 9/11 Truth, Rob Balsamo. So to honor his work, we're going to be looking at some things outside of the scope of AE 9/11 Truth this week and shine a light on Rob and the group that he sustained for so many years, Pilots for 9/11 Truth. So today we're joined by Bruce Sinclair. Bruce is a member of Pilots for 9/11 Truth. He's got at least 44 years of flying experience and has done a number of interviews and talks on the subject we'll be discussing today. Bruce, welcome to 9/11 Freefall.
Thank you.
Before we get into 9/11, tell us about yourself and your career.
Hey, I started my career in 1966 as a Royal Canadian Air Cadet. I received a scholarship to get my pilot's license, and I've been flying ever since. So that would be actually, I think, 54 years or 50, whatever. It's a lot of years. It's more than half of all flying since the Wright brothers in 1903. So, yeah, I've been around aviation for a long time and loved every minute of it. Wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah, I mean, it must be so cool to be a pilot. I can imagine it's a lot of work to learn how to fly a plane and land it. And I've heard that landing and taking off are the most dangerous parts of flying. I don't know that. I've just heard that. But that responsibility that you have and having your own life and other people's lives on your hands and making sure they get safely to where they are, must be a lot of training involved. And you must have to really know your stuff to do that.
I would describe it as lifelong learning. You're never done training. You're never done studying. You're never done learning. Particularly when there's accidents or incidents involved, we're always studying them as carefully as possible because we want to make sure that whatever mistakes happen to cause the accident don't happen again. So it's lifelong learning and a wonderful career, and I'm still learning and I'm still teaching. I've been doing a lot of teaching too. So I was lucky enough to get sent to Boeing to become trained as a performance engineer. So I taught performance for several airlines, and still it's kind of one of my interests beyond just actually flying the airplane. So, yeah, it's been a wonderful career, wouldn't change a thing. And let me say that right off the giddy up that I'm shocked and saddened to hear about the passing of Captain Balsamo. That was a terrible shock to hear that. I'm so sorry to hear it. Great guy, and has been a lot for the truth movement.
Absolutely. I was friends with him on Facebook, and it was sad to see that post on his timeline announcing that he had passed away last week. I think his work should be known about. I think that it should be heard, and people should be going to Pilots for 9/11 Truth and checking out their stuff. I remember that it was very big around 2008, 2009 when I first woke up to 9/11 Truth. I watched a lot of those videos without even realizing who had made them or that there was a group really called Pilots for 9/11 Truth. But they were very prolific in putting out materials. So, Bruce, where were you on 9/11? How did you start to question it?
Actually, I was on days off here in near Edmonton, where I live, Alberta, Canada. And as soon as I heard about it, I immediately felt totally helpless. So I jumped into action and got involved with the Canadian Red Cross here to house people that had their flights diverted to Edmonton and make sure that everyone got housed and looked after. And well, that's how I spent my day on 9/11.
What made you question it?
Well, right off the giddy up, it didn't make sense to me as a pilot and performance engineer. The whole thing didn't make sense. What really piqued my interest, shortly after the event, there was a French fellow that came up with a video on a website called Find the Boeing. I found that absolutely compelling because he was clearly able to demonstrate that there's no possible way that a Boeing 757 hit the Pentagon. And so that certainly piqued my interest. And then I found Rob through Pilots for 9/11 Truth and became a core member for many, many years. And you know, we've been going down the rabbit hole, and the rabbit hole's quite deep and it's quite disturbing, but it is what it is, so we have to keep digging.
Right, I mean, we got to keep on questioning everything. I mean, we know the towers in New York were brought down in controlled demolitions. The evidence has proven that. So, as an organization at AE, we don't go beyond that. That is our scope. But as individuals, obviously, if we have a major problem with a big part of this event, we need to look at all parts of this event and ask ourselves questions. Point out the things that don't make sense to us. I mean, something that's never made sense to me is why they don't just release the videos at the Pentagon. That would put the debate to rest in 2 seconds if they did that. The only attempted a logical argument that I've heard from somebody was saying that, well, maybe there's something about our defenses that they didn't want us to see that day. Well, if there's defenses they don't want us to see, it obviously didn't work if the official story were correct. Now, maybe we need to look at those defenses, but there is no logical reason not to release videos of something that made this event an act of war. Hitting the Pentagon made it an attack on our country, on our military. So definitely we need to look at that and ask as many questions as we can, whether other people like it or not. So Rob Balsamo was at the forefront of questioning the aviation aspects of September 11th, which include all the planes that were involved, and of course the plane that went into the Pentagon. Tell us more from your perspective about Rob Balsamo and his mission with Pilots for 9/11 Truth.
Okay, well, I'd like to interject one thing right off the bat. And I would say that a couple of things. First off, I don't like to use the term 9/11 because it's a very touchy kind of gut reaction that people have to that term. It's better referred to as the events of September 11th, 2001. If that takes the sting out of it, and it kind of neutralizes it, if you will. As you said, the plane that hit the Pentagon, and I would disagree with that completely, and I would never use that term. I would say the plane that's alleged to have hit the Pentagon, because the evidence is overwhelming that there was no airplane that hit the Pentagon. So I'm sure that you've seen the video and the website from the fellows who did all the research at the Pentagon, and it's, I'm trying to remember the name of it. I've watched it for a while, but it's, help me out here, you know the name of it? It's called,
The Citizens Investigation Team?
Yeah, Citizen Investigation Team's video or presentation. It's called National Security Alert. Every single person needs to watch that who has any interest in the events of September 11, 2001. Because they've done the research, and, you know, I don't know, I'm kind of going in circles here, but I'll just keep talking if that's okay. For example, I attended an event in Toronto, Canada, where to investigate where it's, I describe it as where academia decided to get involved in the events of September 11, 2001. And unfortunately, the people who had the really heaviest evidence were Citizen Investigation Team. They were not invited because, quote-unquote, it was too controversial, they said. Well, yeah, it was too controversial because it's a direct link between the perpetrators of 9/11 and or September 11th and the events that happened. But with the Pentagon, there's a direct link to the military and a direct link to the United States government. So this is the really one, in my opinion, that we need to focus on is what happened at the Pentagon. And there's overwhelming evidence that it was explosives planted in the Pentagon. And yes, there was a large transport category airplane that overflew the Pentagon on a track which was impossible to create the damage that was created by the explosives. And if you look at the, if you go through the stuff from CIS investigation team, you can see that the steel beams in the bottom of the structure were blown out and up. Now, the only way that could have happened is if there was explosives in the building. There's no evidence whatsoever of a plane hitting the Pentagon. But there's plenty of evidence of a large transport category airplane overflying the Pentagon as the explosives were set off. So, there you go. Look at the Pentagon. And then, of course, for people who don't know anything about the events of September 11th, start off with Building 7. Punch in your computer, Building 7, World Trade Center, and you're going to find overwhelming evidence that that building was brought down by explosive devices. A 47-story building doesn't collapse into its own shadow and vertically and symmetrically in 6.5 seconds without the aid of explosives. So they're the great place to start. Those are the two things that people I would focus on. One of my friends was in New York that day, and I knew he was there. Of course, I was very concerned about what had happened. And here's the story he told me. He said, I was sleeping at my sister's house in, I can't remember what the name is, right across from, one of the boroughs straight across from Manhattan. And in her apartment building, and she phoned him in the morning and said, we need to get up on the roof of our building, not now, right now. He said, what are you talking about? She says, I don't have time to explain, just get up on the roof. Get up there as fast as you can. So he quickly dressed, made his way to the roof of the apartment building in Brooklyn, which was had a perfect unobstructed view of the Twin Towers. And the North Tower was already on fire, smoke pouring out of it. And he was standing there, couldn't believe his eyes. And then he saw the second airplane. He visually saw the second airplane making its way towards the South Tower. And he watched it fly right into the South Tower with his own eyes. So he would say, well, okay, so I'll give you a little more details. He said, I couldn't tell what kind of airplane it was because it was too far away. But in my personal opinion, it was a drone because of the way it was being maneuvered, it appeared to be a drone. So another being controlled remotely. So now what would his qualifications be? Well, he's a 747 captain, same age as me, for PIA. He was over there visiting his sister. He's an ex-military pilot with combat experience, and he's also a trained accident investigator. So you couldn't have got a better set of eyes to actually physically watch the second plane fly into the South Tower. So there you go. That's one of two friends that were actually involved in there. One of my other friends was actually in an airplane flying into New York after the Twin Towers had been hit and had a perfect view from the air because it was a perfectly clear day. He was flying one of the jets that flew in there.
Well, I would imagine, I mean, if they're going to go through the trouble of putting explosives in the towers, there's probably more to this than we have even looked at, and there may be even things that even independent researchers haven't even caught on to related to September 11th. I mean, you're going to do one thing that's acceptable, but they're not going to do other things and other aspects of this. I find that very hard to believe, and I would love for one day for this all to come out and actually get the full story, some kind of confession or whatever, explaining how all of this was done. I think it'll be the most interesting story in world history. Now, getting back to Pilots for 9/11 Truth, because we want to put a spotlight on Rob this week. Like I said, he did a lot of good work. He produced films, he actually did the animations, and they were very good animations. Everything was right to scale. It was called Intercepted. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, well, he actually did numerous videos, and I thought they were all extremely well done. And, of course, he solicited input from various people, including myself, when they were in production. So there's so many aspects of that they examined of the events of September 11th. and I don't even quite know where to start. The video you're referring to is the fact that there was a very strong evidence that the aircrafts were swapped in flight. And so the planes which were involved in the events at New York City were not the planes that they were alleged to have been. And I'm a very strong believer in that. There's also very strong indication that at least one of those airplanes landed at the Cleveland Hopkins Airport. And the airline had even said they did. So it had acknowledged that their plane was on the ground in Cleveland Hopkins Airport. So obviously was not hitting any towers anytime soon. If I'm going to touch on one other subject which came up. As you know, or probably know, Pilots for 9/11 Truth got a copy of the CSV file of the alleged black box, or the recorder from the plane which is alleged to have hit the Pentagon, and did extensive research on that. Just as for people who are not really familiar, don't want to get into great detail, one of our investigators who's able to read the CSV, which is a comma separated value file, was able to look at only one particular, or he looked at one particular aspect, which was, what was the position of the cockpit door? Because it's monitored. Once per second, the recorder records the position of the cockpit door. And what he was able to determine is that from the time that the alleged recording began until it ended, the cockpit door was never opened. So that's a great place for people to start that think that this is all nonsense and it was really happened and everything. First off, I don't even think it was the airplane that was involved, because there's ample evidence that the file was fake. But if you look at just that one aspect alone, what was the position of the cockpit door? How could the alleged airplane be hijacked if the cockpit door was never opened from the time of the beginning of the recording to the end of the recording?
You guys are pilots. You're speaking out. Had you received any kind of professional backlash as a result of adding your name to that website and being so vocal about your issues with the official story?
Surprisingly, no. I've received zero professional backlash for being involved with Pilots for 9/11 Truth, and that's quite something, considering I am quite vocal and outspoken and not afraid to share my opinions with people. But I've received no personal or professional backlash, which is nice. Although, you know, when you are interested in the subject, and if they aren't, drop it, because they've already got their mind made up, so don't waste your time.
Right. I've come to find out that one person isn't going to make a difference overall in the war. So if somebody's just stubborn and not going to listen, then it's best to just move on to the next person. They don't matter in the end anyway. They're just going to go along with whoever wins in the end. That's the case with most things throughout history. It's not like everybody gets involved. Only the people who are passionate and are involved on either side are the ones fighting, and they're the ones that convert everyone else who are just kind of going with the flow. Now, it's very interesting that this group has been around. I actually remember watching these videos during my whole waking up to 9/11 truth, getting through my whole could this be real phase, just looking at the stuff right along with all of the other evidence. I mean, how can you not, when you wake up to the fact that we were lied to, that there's no way the official story could be true? You want to know everything. It's a very natural response here.
If you read that amazing quote by another wonderful person of the Truth Movement, it would be lost, which is Lieutenant Colonel Sheldon Langford. He was a military pilot, and he wrote this most amazing quote, which is, it's actually posted right at the top of, you know, of the website, so you can find it very quickly. And basically, he was just saying that these events are a challenge, probably the most serious challenge to the longevity of the Republic. And I can't give you the exact quote. I wish I could, but it's on the Pilots for 9/11 Truth website. And a fantastic quote. Unfortunately, he's also passed away, so we're losing these fantastic advocates. So sad, really.
Yeah, and I think that these questions are very important for the Republic. If you can't get to the truth of the biggest mass murder in our history, on our soil, then what can you get to the truth of? If you let them get away with this lie, then the lies just get bigger and bigger. You keep redrawing the line until you're backed into the corner. So that's why you speak out, you speak boldly, and damn the consequences. In our last few minutes here, it's 19 years after 9/11, and I get this question related to the Twin Towers. What does it still matter? Why do we need to still question this event? We've got new things going on as we speak right now. To you, why is it important to still keep on asking these questions, and what do you feel the legacy of Pilots for 9/11 Truth is?
You know what? If you stop seeking the truth, if you just roll over and die and don't want to pursue the truth, you will eventually wind up living in a dictatorship. And right now, I'm concerned about that's happening in the United States of America as we speak. You are slipping into a banana republic as we speak. And I don't think there's any Americans that want to live in a banana republic. What happened on September 11th, 2001 is a microcosm of what's happening worldwide. And if there's one book that people want to read that puts this all together, you have to read Crossing the Rubicon, The Decline and Fall of the American Empire. This, you must read this book. This ties it all together, and then you'll go, aha, now I get it. This is what's happening.
We are certainly dealing with the consequences of September 11th, and that is why I stick to this issue, why I continue shining a light on it, pulls the rug out from under all the things that are bothering us right now, and I really think it'll make not just this country, the world a better place. So, Bruce, thank you so much for the work you've done speaking out, and thank you so much for coming on 9/11 Free Fall today.
September 11, 2001, New York City. A beautiful September morning turns into a nightmare. Millions watch as the world changes forever. Two aircraft used as missiles to force an apparent agenda. We've been told people from thousands of miles away hated our freedoms and our way of life, that they hijacked four aircraft, two which they managed to navigate to lower Manhattan with the intent to cause extreme damage to our freedoms and way of life. American Airlines Flight 11 and United Airlines Flight 175, both 767-200s, are the aircraft reported to have been used in the destruction of the World Trade Center. Pilots for 9/11 Truth have been able to obtain black box data from the National Transportation Safety Board, in which the NTSB claims to have come from United 93 and American 77. Thorough analysis of this data indicates many conflicts within the government story. Every government agency contacted refuses to comment. The black boxes for the aircraft reportedly used for the strike in New York City, however, do not exist. According to government agencies, the black boxes were never recovered, but according to other sources, they were. DeMasi and Ballone, two workers at Ground Zero, were tasked by the FBI to locate the black boxes. They claimed three of the four were recovered. According to author Dave Lindorf, a source at the NTSB also states the recorders were recovered and given to the NTSB for analysis. The story dead ends there, as all government agencies, including the NTSB, now deny the existence of these recorders reportedly found at Ground Zero. What could these recorders have told us? Flight data recorders are built to withstand 3,400 Gs and temperatures of 1,100 degrees Celsius. The fact that people who worked at Ground Zero claim the recorders were found intact, and other sources claim the recorders were sent to the NTSB for analysis, this is just more evidence which conflicts with what we've been told, to add to the growing mountain of conflicting evidence. We don't expect the black boxes or the possible data they contain will ever be produced for the World Trade Center strike, so we will have to analyze data which is available. Since we do not have FDR data from the World Trade Center strike aircraft, we have to look elsewhere for any other type of data which may have been gathered and reported. One of the data sets we do have is position, speed, and a crude form of altitude data claimed to be from the 84th Radar Evaluation Squadron, also known as RADES. Initially denied by the FAA, a backdoor FOIA request produced this RADES radar data. Although reviewing altitude envelopes as compared to ASR radar with altitude reporting, also known as Mode C, and the fact the NTSB admits Rady's data can have potentially large errors, it's not prudent to use such information for precise analysis, as others have done. The NTSB also performed a radar data impact speed study, in which they claim to have used ASR radar, which is much more accurate than Rady's for calculating speed and altitude, especially when Mode C is available. The speed cited for the strike aircraft exceed aircraft limitations set by the manufacturer for the aircraft reportedly used, unmodified airline fleet stock 767s. Can a 767 obtain such speeds? We have attempted to gather wind tunnel data from the manufacturer to answer this very question, but still without success. We search for other 767 aircraft accidents in which a comparison can be made and a benchmark set. Egypt Air 990, a 767 which reportedly exceeded its max operating limits, can be used as precedent as data is available from its flight data recorder, according to the NTSB. The NTSB calculates aircraft speed as 430 knots and 510 knots for American 11 and United 175 respectively, both reported as 767s. Those who make excuse for the government story attempt to cite Egypt Air 990, a 767 which reportedly was an intentional crash by one of the flight crew, as precedent that a 767 can reach speeds reported for the aircraft which allegedly struck the World Trade Center. According to the NTSB, which is disputed by Egyptian investigators, Egypt Air 990 first officer pushed the nose over to commit suicide, taking crew and passengers with him. During this dive, Egypt Air 990 exceeded maximum operating speeds for a 767, which are 360 knots and 0.86 Mach. We will cover the reason for assigning two airspeed limitations shortly. The NTSB reports the flight data recorder from Egypt Air 990 recorded a peak speed of 0.99 Mach at an altitude of 22,000 feet during its dive. 0.99 Mach is just below the speed of sound. Again, maximum operating speeds for a 767 are 360 knots and 0.86 Mach, respectively assigned as VMO, which is velocity max operating, and MMO, which is Mach max operating. Those who argue that since Egypt Air 990 reached 0.99 Mach, exceeding 0.86, that certainly the World Trade Center aircraft could do the same. What these people fail to realize is the air density at different altitudes and the corresponding effects on an aircraft. Remember, Egypt Air 990 reached its peak speed at 22,000 feet. World Trade Center aircraft were operating close to sea level. As you can see, when an aircraft descends, air pressure increases rapidly, directly increasing air density. There is a good reason Boeing assigns two airspeed for maximum operating limits. One is for lower altitude in this very dense air, in terms of knots, and the other for higher altitudes measured in Mach.